Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Child Protection in Sport Unit. We're part of the NSPCC and funded by UK Sports Councils. Our work supports organisations to safeguard all children taking part in sport.
I'm here with Jude Toseland, Senior Consultant for the CPSU, my colleagues Mel Adams and Laura Young, both Information Officers for CPSU, and I'm Leanne Gayton, also an Information Officer. Today we're going to discuss the basics of safeguarding for your sports organisations, whether you're just getting started on your safeguarding journey or listening to this podcast as a refresher. You'll hopefully pick up some useful information about what is required of your organisation so that all children taking part in your activities are safe and have an enjoyable experience. Right, so we're going to now talk about the types of abuse and how to identify abuse. So what is child abuse and what are the different types of abuse, Jude?
I think a child abuse is harm to a child. So if an adult is actively harming a child, although child abuse could be done by other children as well. But in legislation and government guidance, there are four main categories of abuse. So we've got emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse and neglect.
And what about bullying? Is that classed as abuse or...?
Bullying's an interesting one because bullying could fall into emotional bullying, sexual bullying, physical bullying. Mm. And we often think of bullying by other young people. So if we ask children what their biggest worry is, it's generally bullying. But it isn't in legislation, it isn't actually a category of abuse.
So that not recognised as abuse?
It's not recognised technically.
Yeah.
But it is a very important thing to bear in mind.
Yeah. And how can sports spot like signs of abuse and what should they be looking out for if they think that, you know, there's a child that is being abused or bullied and how can they kind of support that child?
I think one thing I'd say is don't wait to be told by children. Children will very rarely tell you about abuse. Mm. Occasionally they will, but generally you're looking for signs and changes in behaviour. So with children who come along to a sports club regularly, you will notice any significant changes in their presentation, in their manners, in what they do and don't say. Some children who act out, who misbehave, it's actually an indication of something else that's going on for them that they're not happy about. Mm. But you may also see children who are always on the sidelines. They're the child that isn't part of the overall group. They may have very poor self-confidence, or you may have children who are perhaps presenting concerns when their parents are picking them up, or perhaps you never see their parents at all. Mm. So there may be concerns about something that's going on in the home, because child abuse can happen in the home, it can happen in school and other environments, or it can actually happen directly within the sports club itself.
On our website, we have lots of information about abuse, and you can find details about the signs and symptoms of abuse and what to look out for and what to do if you have concerns about abuse or bullying taking place. Also, this should all be covered in your training that takes place. So if you're a national governing body, your sport should have robust safeguarding training in place that would cover all of this within that.
We've got some really good guidance as well on the website around training. So that will give you links to where to obtain training and who to speak to. So depending on what your role is, what the right training is for you.
Yeah, because that's another area, isn't it, that sometimes it's hard to know, you know, some sports, most sports actually, people do various different roles within that. So they might be a coach, but they also might be the first aider and things like that. So it's figuring out, actually, is it what's relevant for their role and what safeguarding is, what training is relevant for their role. So that's useful. Right, now we're going to go on and talk about the child protection and safeguarding and the differences between those two. So Jude, if you could just tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes, I think a lot of people confuse the terms child protection and safeguarding. We find many people think they are the same thing, but they're actually distinctly different. Child protection is actually a part of safeguarding. So if I compare it to if you're driving a car, and before you drive a car, you'd make sure that you had your driving passed your driving test, you had your licence, the car had its MOT, it's got your tyres checked, you had a recent service. They're all preventing damage and preventing harm. So that would be the equivalent of safeguarding. So in safeguarding terms, your prevention could include a robust code of conduct, you could have policies and procedures, everybody in the club would know who to contact in the event of a concern. Mm. But if you're driving a car and you have an accident, that's when your airbag kicks in. So you need something there to protect you in the event of harm, in the event of an accident. And your child protection procedures in a club, they need to be there in case there are concerns that you need to report on. So clear child protection procedures would tell you what to do in the event of a concern and who to report those issues to.
And what about well-being? Is that, you know, kind of considered under this sort of bracket of child protection and safeguarding? Does that come under this area, or is it sort of kind of completely different area for sports to consider?
Well-being, it's a good question, because well-being is increasingly used as a term within the sports sector and wider. And I would see well-being as being broader again than child protection and safeguarding. So well-being would include all aspects of well-being for children and for adults, but we're here talking particularly around children. So that may include mental health well-being, that may include physical well-being and health and safety. But the government guidance and some of their information for sports organisations is now referring a lot more to well-being in addition to safeguarding.
What does that new term coming into play mean for sports? Does that mean that they now need to start feeding well-being into safeguarding practice and that sort of stuff, and at what level that happens? Because I guess there's a lot of sports clubs who do hear that well-being term banded about now and wonder, well, have I got to take any action on that?
And there isn't one answer to that. No, so it will depend on the structure of your particular organisation. So if you're in a club that is allied to a governing body, in a way, you're in a luckier position that you've got an organisation to go to. Mm. So the likelihood is you will be dealing with well-being, and that you'll have a health and safety procedures, you'll be having risk assessments around events and activities. But the governing body will be primarily responsible for all elements of risk, mm-hmm. as well as the preventative culture within the organisation. If you're not part of a governing body, it would be useful to talk to your local active partnership, and we've got a full list of all the active partnership contacts on the website to get advice and information. But I think in terms of what you can do in a club to address well-being, you're probably already doing it, because safeguarding fits within that but goes beyond that. So you're thinking about, how can we make this a safe club? How can we have a culture that is safe and inclusive for all young people?
And that kind of moves us on to our next section quite nicely, really, about like the importance of safeguarding and why it's important for sports, and why sports and physical activity providers should engage with safeguarding children and the benefits of that, really.
I think I'm going to start with the benefits, because I think so often safeguarding and child protection, people think about the negatives of that. But we know that to have a inclusive culture for children and young people, where they are going to continue to participate, when they are going to perform to their best ability, they need to feel safe. So if we have good, robust safeguards in place within a club or within an activity, then we will actually have an environment which feels fun, feels safe, and where they can perform to their best.
I guess, and also, you know, potentially keep children engaged in sport for longer, and they'll you know,
absolutely stay, they're going to keep going, aren't they?
Keep going if they're enjoying it and loving it, and then, you know, that will encourage them to keep at it, won't it?
Totally.
Is there something as well around one of the benefits actually being to the sporting organisation in terms of if they do come up against cases or challenges, that, you know, it's of benefit to them to have engaged in that process in the long run, in terms of getting their staff appropriately trained, doing DBS checks, those sorts of things? You know, it is going to serve them well should there be an issue. So it protects the club or the organisation, as well as protecting the child that or children that are taking part.
Yeah, yes, and the other benefit that I was thinking of is around involving young people. So if you're involving young people in a safe, fun environment, that includes talking to them and involving them in planning and in activities, because they are the future of the sport. So the sport isn't going to exist without their support and buy-in. Also, young people have often got much better ideas than some of us adults, and they may have some creative energies and expertise that we can feed into. The other side of the importance of safeguarding is obviously the risks. So the risks of not doing it, which does pick up some of the points of the fact that you're managing that risk by having it in place. But if you are going to come against an issue, so if you've not managed safeguarding well within the sports organisation, then what happens is young people leave the sport. There are financial implications, so sometimes if you have a sponsor might pull out. Fundraising is very difficult when you've got child protection issues that are not managed well. And reputational risk is a key risk. So you're never going to be able to avoid child protection concerns or concerns more generally around safeguarding. But if you manage them well by having all the procedures in place at the beginning, then you're going to mediate a lot of those risks.
So we've talked a lot about why safeguarding is important, but what does that safeguarding actually look like? What steps do clubs and sports organisations need to take?
Again, if a sports club or organisation is part of a governing body, then you should have all of that support in place for you. It won't be the case for every sports club that's part of a governing body, but your first step, if you are part of a governing body, go to them and you will get a lot of the resources and information. But for all sports organisations, it's important to have a safeguarding policy and procedure. And what that means is a policy statement to say we are committed to keeping children safe, and procedures to break it down as to what that means for each different situation. So examples might be, how do we make sure that everybody who's coaching and instructing children is suitable for that post? So have they got the right qualifications? Have they got references? Have you made sure they've gone through all the appropriate recruitment and selection checks? So that's an important procedure to have in place. Another area would be events. So if you have regular events and activities, make sure you've done a really good risk assessment beforehand and have a safeguarding procedure around the event. So who's going to be responsible if there's any concerns at the event? And who's arranging travel for the event? So things like that need to be addressed. We've actually got a lot of information on our website with some templates and tools that you can go to under the resource library to give you a lot of this information.
Yeah, we have a section as well called Putting Safeguards in Place that you can go to, and the online self-assessment tool is a fantastic tool that you can go and you just go through and mark the bits that you feel your organisation has got in place, and then there's areas that you can kind of improve on if you've perhaps not got everything in place just yet. And I believe there's actually a little video that we have on the website where Jude talks you through how to use that tool as well, so you can have a little bit of a listen to that as well.
Yes, unfortunately you get to see me then as well.
So once those basics are in place, once the policy is in place, what other steps can be taken? What happens next?
I think one of the most important areas is to have somebody responsible for safeguarding in a club. So appointing a club welfare officer, or your sports organisation may call that post something slightly different. It could be a safeguarding officer, or some people call them a child protection officer. But having somebody with that overall responsibility, ideally it'd be great to have two people, but we know that for many clubs it's quite a challenge to get one person. And then after that, you need to make sure that person is trained and supported. So various organisations have training available for club welfare officers. We have a programme called Time to Listen, which many of the sports organisations will actually use. Or your sports organisation may have their own version. But then who does that Club Welfare Officer get their support from? So it's important to think that one through, because the Club Welfare Officer can be an absolutely key role, but their role isn't just child protection, it's also safeguarding. So it's putting everything in place to make it a safe environment for children and young people. And as well as the Club Welfare Officer, you need to think about the Club Committee. So how does the Club Committee support safeguarding across the board? So that might be through having the Club Welfare Officer on the Club Committee, or it could be that, the Club Committee is regularly thinking about safeguarding on their agenda. And then there are specific policies and procedures around things like staffing ratios. So if you've got an activity, making sure that you have the right ratio of adults to children. And if you've got young people who are in leadership positions, how are you going to support those young people? So there'll be a number of different things that you may want to consider in terms of your own particular activity. And that will depend, that will vary from sport to sport. Codes of conduct are really helpful and really important. And you can have codes of conduct for participants, you can have them for coaches, you can have them for referees, you can even have them for parents and spectators. And what that does is it makes it clear for everybody what's the expected behaviour of that they are kind of signing up to. But also it helps you as an organisation to have something to go back to if they are not complying with that expected behaviour.
If you're finding all of that information a little bit overwhelming, there's quite a lot of things for your club to take on board, have a go at our self-assessment tool. It's a free tool online. You can just go onto our website and then work through all of those points that are just covered, and you can sort of digest it at your own pace and come back to it at a later stage.
So what about if it comes to actually dealing with concerns? How should sports organisations deal with and report any concerns or information?
It's important that all sports organisations are aware of the procedures to follow if there are concerns. So it's very useful if there's a flow chart or a clear diagram as to what to do if there are concerns and who to contact. In general, every organisation will have their own procedures, but they are very similar. So the key elements are, if there's an emergency, then you're calling the emergency services, you're calling 999. Even if you call 999, it's still important to follow your procedures and make sure everybody knows what's going on. So if you are part of a governing body, let your governing body know what's going on. In general, most organisations tend to refer concerns either up to the governing body, or they will deal with it themselves but with the support of governing bodies. So if you are an organisation where you're referring concerns up to the governing body, then you're wanting to do that, if possible, with the permission of the people who the concerns are about. So that might be talking to the child about what you're going to do, if it's relevant, and if it's not posing the child any risk, talking to the parent or the carer as well. And getting that in writing, so making sure that everything is written down and ideally signed and dated. So if we need to go back to that, or if the organisation needs to go back to that for any reason, then they can use that information as evidence. So it will depend on your organisation as to the next stages. So we have a lot of information on our website, including templates such as incident report forms, and your own organisation may have its own templates and resources. So if you want to want more information, go to our website, have a look at some of the resources we've got on that, or go to your organisation and then have a conversation with him about what's around. The other important source of support is the NSPCC helpline, which is 0808 800 5000, and anyone can phone them for advice. So that's an important number to keep in your head.
So we've talked a little about how to put those safeguards in place and what to do if there are concerns to be dealt with. What happens with in the longer term with sports maintaining and embedding the steps and policies that they've put in place?
In CPSU, we work with national governing bodies and active partnerships to ensure that they do actually maintain safeguarding right the way through their organisations. And many national governing bodies and active partnerships will also be working with clubs to make sure that they're actually maintaining those safeguards. So it's really important to review your safeguards, all your policies and procedures on a regular basis. So whenever you write a report or write a procedure, put a date in that you're going to review it, because it's important to review that. And then when you're reviewing it, that's a great opportunity to talk to other people in the club about how it's working. So it's an opportunity to talk to young people, saying, do you know who to report concerns to? Talking to other members of the club, such as coaches and other members, to say, what do you think of this? Is this well written? Is this accessible? Does this make sense? And by doing that, you're both reviewing the procedures, you're keeping safeguarding on the agenda, but you're starting to bed that into the culture of the organisation by keeping that dialogue going around safeguarding.
So it's quite an ongoing process, really. Then it's, you've got the basics that we've talked about earlier, and then really to embed that across organisations and clubs.
Absolutely. And some organisations will actually have a group, maybe it might be a subgroup of a committee or an organisation, that will particularly focus on safeguarding and keep an eye on what's going on to make sure that's live and regularly reviewed.
Is there anything for sports organisations or clubs to work to on a long-term basis that will help them through that process of constantly checking their procedures and updating them?
At a national level, we work with organisations through the safeguarding standards, and then following the standards, once they've achieved all levels of the standard, then there is a safeguarding framework, which is an annual review process. We've also got the self-assessment tool online, which people can use themselves to self-assess, and you don't have to just use that once. That could be an ongoing process to help review your organisation. At a local level, I'd suggest using some of those tools and adapting them to a local environment. But you may also be linking with Club Mark and Club Matters, and that will give you a structure to review some of your own structures and systems.
As we've gone through this podcast, we've heard Jude talk about national governing bodies and active partnerships, but there are also lots of other organisations and bodies involved in sport. So Jude, could you just talk about that a little bit more and just sort of summarise those other organisations that are involved?
Yeah, so the structure of sport in this country is quite complicated. So we have the national governing bodies where they will oversee specific sports. So an example would be Swim England, overseeing a lot of the swimming activities, the Football Association. So right from huge, great national governing bodies of sport right through to quite small organisations. But then on a local level, there are also the active partnerships. Now, active partnerships are based in counties, and they oversee sports development across the county, so they can link with a whole lot of club-based activities. And they are a really good resource if you're in a club and you want some local resource. The active partnership will be the place where they can provide training, they can provide resources, they will coordinate the local school games activities. And each active partnership has a safeguarding lead. So we have a list of the safeguarding contacts for all the national governing bodies and active partnerships on our website under the need to deal with a concern section. But then, in addition to the active partnerships and national governing bodies, there are other organisations that can provide you with support. So I've talked about the NSPCC. So NSPCC have a helpline that's available, and the number for that is 0808 800 5000. But there's also Childline that's available for children to call, which is 0800 1111, and that's available for children to call for advice and support. And then locally, there are local safeguarding children's boards and local safeguarding adults boards, or local arrangements, as they're now increasingly being called. And they coordinate all activities on a local basis, including your children's services, police, probation, housing, health, education. and they provide training and resources and support at a local level. So they're a good source as well. So if it's a good idea to go and look at your local arrangements or local Safeguarding Children's Board websites to see what they've got on board. And then in addition to that, there are several other organisations that Sport England and the other sports councils can link through, which will have resources, information and support. And there's always the Child Protection and Sport Unit website for all your safeguarding needs.
Thank you for listening to this Child Protection in Sport Unit podcast. If you're looking for more information and resources on safeguarding children in sport, please visit our website at thecpsu.org.uk.